Accession number 21116, wheel 4.
Nuzzle rail form. Originally, the belief was that the RAF would provide pilots for the gliders, but as there was no way for them to get back, then the people infantry should have to train them to operate with the infantry. I believe they asked for volunteers. I know that we got a number, I think it was 4 or 5, with our battalion, and there was one American, and the others were Canadian. They was all in the Canadian Air Force. They was all in trouble, all awaiting court-martials, and I think the reason they volunteered was to escape the court-martials. To keep the hand in, they had the Tiger Moth, small Tiger Moth biplane. They landed them into a field behind the Barton Stacey camp. They could land the things anywhere, more or less. And so they was keeping the hand in, flying these things. And at the same time, they was training the senior ranks and the officers to do as they call it, aerial map reading. Now, I think this was pretty useless operation, because the pilots are the only people that can really see out. So there wasn't much map reading done, but we had some quite good experiences, because the Canadians were mad, and they gave us bags of aerobatics. The favourite trick was to dive, pull it up into a loop, and straighten out at the top of the loop so you're flying upside down. Now the Tiger Moth, the tank on the Tiger Moth was on top of the top wing, and the engine was gravity fed. So that when you're thrown upside down, it stopped feeding it. So the engine stopped, petered off and stopped. So you then twisted it over, dived, and of course once you got into the dive position, the petrol went back down to the engine, and the pops going round against the wind, it started again. They did this, so it was very funny. It was funny. It was not funny to us when the first time they did it. Anyway, all the senior ranks and the officers went through this thing. The gliders, the RAF never did become glider pilots. It was obviously that it didn't work, because the people they were sending us were rubbish anyway. So it was easier then to train a trained infantryman to fly the glider. Then he'd be of some use when they landed, because they had to join the fighting. And this is what they did in later on. The Army Air Corps formed. They then had the three gliders. Well, the three gliders were being manufactured. The smallest one was the Hotspur, and it had two pilots, because they used it for training, pilot training. Two seats at the front, and then the rest of them were sitting sideways. So you had some sitting facing left, some facing right, to keep the balance right. The Hotspurs, they had they carried 8 people inside. They were training planes. They were never used in operations. I've got a feeling they was, but the operation they was used on didn't come out. They'd never been published. But I've got strongly believed that they were actually used once in Norway, but that's just something. The next one was the Horsa. The Horsa was quite much bigger, 3-ply, made of 3-ply. It was capable of carrying a 6-pounder anti-tank gun and a jeep, or a jeep and trailer, or jeep and trailers, or numbers of men. It was a workhorse, very, very good. Very good thing. And then there was also a big one, an ammo car, that was very big, and that would carry a Tetra tank. And that was 6-ton 10 tank. It was only a 2-man tank, called a Tetra. The guards had some in England, because we borrowed one of their tanks to fly it. The first time they fly it, it damaged the plane quite badly, the glider quite badly. They was used, I never saw one used in action, but on D-Day, some of the British armour cars took in American tanks into the onto the American drop. So the armour car was used. We then, just before Christmas, we got a signal saying they wanted 8 men to go up to do guinea pigging. They're going to fly the first live load, and they were flying it at Ringway Aerodrome in Manchester. That's where they trained the parachutists. Parachutists used to take off from Ringway and drop on Tottenham Park, which is the other side of Manchester. So they were doing the first live load with this Hotspur at Manchester. They wanted a sergeant and 7, and it to come from the MT platoon, because the MT platoon was the one that wasn't doing as much training as the others. So we had 3 sergeants in the MT. There was the MT sergeant, who did the everything about the vehicle side. We had a tech sergeant to deal with all the spares and things of that nature, and then there was a fitter sergeant, which was myself. I live in Halifax. One lived in York. One lived in down in on the South Coast somewhere. We got volunteers from the men, but we all volunteered, but. As the chappie that was living on the South Coast, we were thinking that if we could get up there, we could get home for Christmas, from Manchester, Halifax, not being very far. So there was 2 of us, the bloke from York and myself, tossed up who should take it. He won. So off they went to Ringway. We got a signal later on that crashed and all been killed. The MT officer and myself got the job of going up to identify the bodies. That was a bit gruesome. They'd been carrying the rifles with them, and they were sitting in the glider with the rifle butt against the side of the glider and the muzzle more or less against the chest. And when they actually crashed in, the rifle barrels went through the chest. In fact, in one case, it actually went through the gas mask container through the chest, and the barrels were bent like bananas. Really, woodwork shattered off, but the barrels were completely bent. We identified the people and the mortuary. They had a mortuary there, and immediately we'd identified, they took them out and they put me and an MT officer in a glider and flew us. It was just as well they did, because probably if they'd have waited, I'd have refused to get into one. But once I'd been in it and flown around and landed, I was quite happy then. Right, we getting a bit further on. We started to get the bigger aircraft, the Horses, and we started doing live loads at Kidlington Aerodrome near Oxford. The glider pilots were coming down, landing. Our people would go inside, they'd take off, they'd be towed off, circle round, land. We'd fly it around quite a bit and then land, and then we'd put another crew in, and we'd get in practice of loading and unloading gliders going into them and flying. The thing about a glider, it's called a glider, but it doesn't. I always think of a glider that could soar, but of course a military glider is very heavy, and of course it just comes down. It can't go up at all, it just goes down. So it can come down in a shallow glide, or it can come down in a steep glide. Now, they've been coming down in shallow glides, but the brigadier, I don't know if it was the brigadier or the colonel of the glider pilot regiment, had been critical about this, because the shallower you glide and the longer you're in near the ground and open to attack. And they brought a thing called dive approach. Their idea was to come in high, dive steeply, level out and bang the glider down, so they wasn't exposed to anti-aircraft fire so much. Now, this is a bit grim, because there's two pilots operating these things, and they really do have to pull to level out. They've got to pull back on the sticks to level it out. And of course, they wasn't diving at steep enough for the CO. And while we was there, he gave a demonstration what it should be, and he killed himself. He dived so steep he didn't pull out, and he crashed onto Kidlington, and he got killed. The Board of Regiment Band produced a band to work when they buried him for a military funeral. I'll just move back a little bit to when we was exercising the horses, in the Hotspur, sorry, the small ones. We did an exercise with the Power Regiment on Salisbury Plain. The Powers were going to drop first, the gliders coming down second behind them. Daylight, it was a demonstration, and I was told that Churchill was watching it. They had a stand built at the far end, and the officers and one thing, and Churchill was supposed to be watching this thing. And the Powers coming in, we coming in behind them in gliders. The timing went wrong. The gliders finished up landing among the Powers. They was among the Powers before they'd hit the ground, and we killed some of them. They got caught on the wings, hit with the wings, or got dragged on the ground. After that, I can never remember an operation the way the gliders came in after the Powers originally. Normally, the situation would be the Pathfinders would come up, Powers would come over first. They would land, they would set up beacons. Then the gliders would come in. Because it found it fatal. The glider just can't veer. It's just stuck there coming down in a glide. The fact that these Powers were there, they just couldn't open it. They just went straight into them. So we're now getting on towards, we're now in back into 42. They formed a new unit in 1st Airborne Division. It was called, they fetched a unit in. They fetched it from being an anti-aircraft battery into the 1st Airborne Division, and it went under the name of the 1st Air Landing Light Attack Battery, City of London Yeomanry, the Rough Riders. Was the 1st Air Landing Light Attack Battery, City of London Yeomanry, the Rough Riders. It was a TA regiment in London. It was in a posh part of the London because the members, even the gunners in the regiment, were gentlemen, mean gentlemen. There was solicitors and things of that nature, well-abridged people, but they was quite happy to serve as gunners in the regiment. The CO of it was the Major, the Earl of Ardwick. Very large, very aristocratic chappie. He actually served in the Guards of it originally, because I once saw a photo of him, but he would taken over as CO of this unit. He was rather eccentric, put it mildly.
In what way?
He didn't comply with the rest of the army. When he met Montgomery, he just walked up to Montgomery, didn't salute him, put his hand out and said, "Ardwick." And Montgomery didn't know what to do. He was very much a different, he was different. This unit had moved in, and they had brought with them their Bofors, anti-aircraft guns, 40 millimetres. Quite a whacking great gun. And they were going to put them into gliders and fly them with the gliders. And they had to then to have a unit with them. In a regiment, if there'd been a regiment of artillery, they'd have an ROC work with it. Sorry, by this time it was Remy. In 1952, Remy came in, and I just got a different cap badge. Where I was a sergeant ROC, I became a sergeant Remy in October 42. Being an independent battery, they had no workshops. So what they did, they formed a workshop detachment, which were myself, a staff sergeant. I got promoted staff sergeant, and I moved from the Board Division to take up this job. And we had 10 men, and it was called a sub-workshop section. And our job was to do the repairs for this anti-aircraft battery. But first of all, we had to get the glider, to get the guns to go in the gliders. The guns were far too big. Now, the colonel of the Royal Electrical Mechanical Engineers, he was the colonel of the Remy people in the 1st Airborne Div. He was, not, I wouldn't say a friend of mine, but when I was in, I was one of the first sergeants, first four sergeants to go in there that were fitters. And he was the first officer, he was the ROC officer, he was the BOO, BOW, Brigade Ordnance Officer. When Remy was formed, he then became a Remy officer, we went into Remy, and eventually became the Cremy Colonel of the 1st Airborne Div. He was in charge of all Remy people. And I'd known him since 1942, I'd known him since back in the 41 actually, and he sent for me and said, look, I've got a job for you. I want you to go with this new unit. I said, well, I don't want to leave my own. But he said, look, I want somebody there that knows the thing because they're brand new into the division. So he taught me into going there, and I promoted staff sergeant. The first job I got to do was to get this glider to go into a glider. Measured it up, and there was no way it was going to go in. But we could take out the barrel easy enough. The barrel was working on an interrupted thread, which meant you give it part of a turn, and you could take it straight off. So you could get rid of barrel. It's at four wheels, the gun itself at four wheels, with a solid bar connecting from one wheel to the other, with the gun platform slap in the middle. So what we did, we cut off the solid, not solid, it was a hollow box section from the front axle to the back axle. We cut it off just behind the platform of the gun at the back and just in front of the platform of the gun at the front. We then put a sleeve inside, made a sleeve to go inside, and brought these two pieces together, drilled a hole through and dropped a pin through. We now had a trailer. It had a towing attachment at four wheels, and it had a platform. It had a bar, which we put a platform on then, so we could carry ammunition. So it was just like a jeep to it. It was like a little trailer, and it was the wheels of the gun. We then had to get the gun itself, the piece, into the glider. It was now big enough, it was now small enough, I should say, to go in. But it was difficult to put go in because it was a heavy weight of metal, and we had to get it up a slope to get it into the body. In those days, they didn't have a front door opening. They just had to go through a hole in the side of the glider. So we had to make some jacks. Well, you could call them jacks. They actually jacked up, but on the bottom of the jacks, they had casters, just like a chair or a sofa. So that once we jacked them up, we could then turn them on a very small scale, and we could push it up, manpower, onto a platform, wheel it into the glider, and turn it, and then lash it down. The glider being three-ply, it had metal channels down there, and strong points, so we could put the gun inside. When we get the gun in, we could get chains, special cables and chains, and fasten it to the strong points. They had left and right-hand thread strainers, so by turning the strainer, we could shorten it or lengthen it, which way tighten it. We could hold it firmly down in the glider. We made a box for the barrel so the barrel could travel on the thing. And then, of course, we could then send with it a crew of the gun and some ammunition and the piece itself. That glider would land. You could manhandle the thing out of the glider, get it onto the ground. Once it was on the ground, you could put the actual pads down which support it when it's firing, and you could then fire it. You couldn't move it. You'd only be able to fire it over a half an arc, half a full circle, because the glider was behind you. You'd then wait for the other glider to land with the wheels, and then it would circle round and try to find a gun. Once you made the two, we had a unit we could move about. Now, absolutely ridiculous idea, in my opinion. I said so in the first place. I said, we can do it, but You can imagine battlefield. Nothing happens in a battlefield you think it's going to do. Nobody lands where they're supposed to land. And you'd have a gun coming down, and there would be, you'd have a load of guns, and they'd all be sat there, but they wouldn't be able to move them until the gliders, that came in with the wheels and the actual jeep. And then it'd go round, running round, and find them. But most operations were done in the night. So it was absolutely useless. But it had to be done. They also had a small anti-aircraft gun, a 20mm cannon that was on the light frame, and you could tow them behind jeeps, and so that was feasible. But the 40mm was not feasible at all. Anyway, we got the thing done. We got the gun to fit in the glider, and then we had to fly it. They said, well, as you made it, you're going to fly with it. So myself and another staff sergeant, he was from the battery, flew on this first live load of this gun. We got it in, we had it strapped down, and we got ready for taking off. Now, the plane that was going to tow us, they had certain tugs for gliders. They had Halifax could tow them. The Stirlings could tow them, but they also had an Albemarle. Albemarle was a two-engine job. It was a failed bomber, really. It was made for bomber originally, as a medium bomber, but it hadn't been successful, so it was given the odd jobs. And besides towing gliders, it also dropped the Pathfinder parachutists, which we'll talk about later. This thing would take us off. Now, the drill is, as you're taking off, the glider takes off first. The glider lifts off the ground, and then it sits on the airstream of the tug. It's about 200 yards. But as I say, about 200 yards of nylon rope connect the two together, and it stretches. But you get on the top of the slipstream, and you sit there, and so you're flying above the plane, and the slipstream of the plane is giving you lift. But the trouble was, when he took off, the Albemarle took off first. It got off the ground before we did, and snatched us off. So when we was up in the air, we're flying below it, and the glider pilots are trying to pull up to get above it. No way could they do it, and the slipstream was hammering us. We was really banging up and down, and so much. The glider, when you're in a glider floor, there's always a lot of grass and dust and muck, which comes from loading and unloading the things. And we was going down so rapidly that the dust was coming off the ground, off the deck of the plane, and was coming up almost under your chin, because we were strapped in at the side of the gun, and the dirt came up to almost chin level, hung there, and then dropped back again. We were going down faster than gravity, pull the dirt down with it. The gun started to chatter. It's only made of three players. The thing was started to chatter. It started to bounce, and the bounce was increasing all the time. I shouted across to the chap at the other side. I said, "We've got to do the strainer." So we undid our belts. We cut off, and we started to tighten the adjusters. The trouble was, the thing was going up and down, so one minute you'd be knelt down, and next minute your legs would be above, you'd be still holding the strainer, but your legs would be above. Then you'd come down with a thump again. We got all our knees, got lumps of skin off all over the knees. Anyway, we got it tightened down again. We sat down again, bolted up again. We tried again to get through. Same thing happened again, so it fastened the strainers in. Finally, they realised no way they're going to get it through. So they said, well, we'll have to make an emergency landing. So they looked around for a potato field. Potato fields are excellent. If you land on an ordinary field, you roll. And when you roll, you've no brakes on the thing. You can't stop you unless you hit something. But on a potato field, we've been furrows where they put the potatoes in and the potatoes are coming through. You could those were attached to the brake, and you could make a quite a good emergency landing. So we looked out for the thing, and then cast off and landed in the potato field. They then came out to fetch us, and eventually they picked they got a thing and they took the glider back to Kidlington. It was a bit airy, but well, the funny part about it was that after this lot was up, the bloke that was sat opposite me, he got an MBE. I got a court of inquiry because I was responsible for the glider, and the glider was unserviceable, it couldn't be used anymore, and they must have cost £5,000 because I had got a court of inquiry as to how I'd come to make a glider unserviceable. It wasn't serviceable. Mind you, of course, I've got away with it. There was nothing at all. In fact, the court of inquiry said, you know, you're in no way to blame. But it always struck me as funny that I got a court of inquiry, the other got an MBE. No, sorry, not an MBE, BEM. He's only staff sergeant. A staff sergeant can't get BEMs. MBEs, he's going to get BEMs. But he didn't get it for that trip, by the way. He didn't get it for being in the glider, but I always told him he did. So, eventually got the thing so he could fly them. We went down to shoot these guns and went down to a place called Stiffkey Ranges on the Norfolk coast, on the north Norfolk coast, and you fire out to sea. Aircraft would come towing a drogue and you'd aim at the drogue. And it had radio communication between the pilot and the tower, control tower, and we had the things up there and we fired them up and down the place. We're shooting quite well. They had to have different sights, because the original sight on the Woeful was called a Stiffkey stick, designed for Stiffkey, and it stuck up a heck of a long way and it couldn't go in the glider. So it had to take them off and it go back to the little sights they had on originally pre-war. But they fired all right. But then there was the Major of the Earl of Warwick said that I want to fire them on the move. He says, you know, it's no point, I want to better fire on the move. So we decided they'd run them up the front and they'd fire them by being towed with the crew sat on. rather funny. The plane comes along and he's towing a drogue, and this thing starts opening fire. And when it started opening fire, suddenly it lost control. And the thing was rocking about all over the place, and the gun was firing everywhere what it should have done. And they actually pushed a tracer was going up in front of the plane instead of going up in front of the drogue, because you guide it in by tracer. You watch your tracer go up, and then you guide the tracer onto your target. But the thing was rocking about so much it went out of control, and the tracer went up in front of the pilot, and the pilot was in communication with the tower. And I've always understood the RAF fighter pilot drawl awfully, awfully. And this voice came over the door and says, I say, old chap, are you aware that I'm towing this bloody thing, not pushing it? And that was another case of humour. Now, one of the people in the City of London Yeomanry was also a cartoonist. And he made a cartoon on this thing. I say, old chap, are you aware that I'm towing this thing, not bloody pushing it? His language is a bit worse than that, actually. But that's another one of the part of the humour of army life. So we've reached 1942, invasion of Italy, invasion of Africa comes into being. Now, no way could they fly the gliders from England to North Africa. So the first airborne div went into action, and the parachutist jumped into North Africa. Quite successful, the Paris, they did very well. We came by sea. So we went up to Gerwick on the Clyde, and we shipped out on a Dutch East Indiaman, and it was a cargo passenger one. The guns themselves were sent out on another cargo vessel. We sailed out of Gaelic, straight round Northern Ireland, and sailed across the Atlantic into a tremendous storm. The troop decks, there was holes, the holes of the ship, what used to carry the cargo, had made into troop decks. But there was no way through from the compartment to get from the troop decks at the front, that through decks down, to get through them, you had to go up a flight of stairs to the open deck. You got across the open deck to go down into the other part of the ship. The weather was so bad, the water coming over the top, nobody could get out of those holes for 3 days. So for 3 days, almost 3 days, these lads were at the front end.